Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. After an hour, you just met Weber on board. S&P futures up 775. NASDAQ futures up 26. Dow futures up 97. Yesterday was an incredibly, well, I'm going to say for some of us, one of the more curious days that I've ever really seen the market react. And again, it's the evil hand of, well, let's put it this way, the hand of the Fed, whether it's evil or not, I guess, is up to the beholder. What do they say, Matty? Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Same thing with the Fed actions.
That's right.
I don't think there's anybody in the Fed I would say is all that beautiful, but anyway, that's another story. We actually had the inflation rates came in hotter than anybody. Kevin, how are you? Are you with us?
At least physically with you, but, you know, you can always make an assessment of the mental part by the time we're done.
Well, it's... We view the world we live in, I guess you have to have a little bit of a one part, your first thought in your mind is, I must be dreaming or something. The second part is, I've already checked out, and I'm in some sort of a limbo or someplace. Or you could actually say, this is all real.
I think flashback when I do it, you know, that this is some kind of hallucinogenic flashback.
Yeah, this is actually the one of the first times that what I'm about to talk about here, just briefly, is the when you value stocks. This is the kind of the fun about it. No, critique me on this, please. When you value stocks, there's all kinds of stuff. There's I'm going to say 50 variables, Kevin. I mean, you look at a stock and you say, God, it's overpriced. But you don't know everything about the place. I mean, you're not the only one reading this incomplete picture. They could have a product in the works that, you know, looks like it might be a really good one. It could be they spent a lot of money on research and development. It's not obvious yet. I mean, it's not just the numbers. I mean, obviously, if you'd not bought Amazon when it was $40 because it looked like they weren't making any money. You know, you're sorry you didn't. I mean, we all know that. There's all kinds of when you see some bad news on a company and a stock doesn't go down. I mean, just because you got the bad news flash today, maybe somebody else, you know, maybe it was out there someplace and you just didn't see it 6 months ago. So there's all kinds of things that affect stocks, and that's what makes it such a huge challenge. You know, generally. To be a manager over a period of time, and people have their niches. You know, we have a guy like Dan. I mean, Dan, his was on yesterday. Dan Janitas. I mean, Dan's niches. He works harder than anybody else on the mid-sized companies and tries to find the ones slightly below the level that we all talk about that are branded with just one of those middle-sized companies that happens to be doing really well and has something better than the next guy. And that's a niche, but it's also a lot of hard work. There used to be every firm had people that would dig out every piece of information regarding Exxon, you know, that maybe the next person didn't get. They bought three or four wells, and two of them are already dry holes, and nobody knew about it yet. That's what makes it fascinating. And when you get to bond valuations and when you get to fixed income investment, the variables really start to drop. I mean, there's not that much there. So when you see something that's a huge shocker in the in that part of the business, it's not like I know everything about that. All I'm saying is that the amount of variables you're dealing with generally are somewhat less. Do you think that's a fair statement? I mean, you're giving somebody. You're giving somebody your money to use for a fee. Okay, and the basics of the fee are, what is the real cost of money, which would cost the real rate of interest. I mean, if I give you $100 for a year because you have an idea to build a hot dog stand and I don't, how much are you going to pay me for my $100? This is very simple. I mean, it comes down to two things. One is, okay, there's a price for that. There's some percentage. Okay, a lot of it depends on the risk. I mean, that part can get complicated. But let's just say there's a 99% of you paying it back. You're the government or somebody. I say, okay, how much am I for me giving you my hundo to use for your idea? I mean, clearly, if it's the government, it's going to be you would think that there's less risk. Now I'm not so sure. Than there would be, if Maddie's putting up a hot dog stand, type of thing. But if he's done 50 hot dog stands before and every one of them's a winner, then there's less risk, right? I mean, so there's a huge array of that. But by and large, I think we could all agree that somebody should have to pay for your money if they're going to use it and not you. I don't think there's any debate there, is there? Although it appears the market thinks there is.
I don't think so either. But in reality, isn't that the same thing you're doing with a stock? It exists in a more potentially more volatile type of setting, but aren't you really just saying I'm putting some capital into the business? And I'm counting on the business to pay me back and for me to earn either a dividend or some kind of appreciation or something like that. So, other than the accounting sense, it is essentially the same transaction, isn't it?
It's exactly the same transaction, except it gets more and more complicated because there's a lot of growth features that may or may not be there. If you're talking about no growth, hopefully you got someplace got some growth. But even like telephone, when it was a monopoly, you knew kind of just what they were doing. And yeah, they were growing with the population, but by and large, you knew they were making $10 a share and sending you a check for $5. Now maybe the next year it'd be, 10.25, and that was priced in as well. But by and large, it was an income thing. It was an income stream. But there's other places that you don't really know the idea. You don't know if Maddie's hot dog stand all of a sudden is going to be making a bazillion dollars a year or less. You don't know if he's going to be so successful at hot dog stands that he's not going to pay you a dividend for 10 years because he's building more and more hot dog stands that are all doing well. And so the price of what the stock you just bought goes flam. I'm saying there's more variables to it, in terms of the price versus income sort of thing. But in fixed income, you're really only talking about the one variable. How am I going to get... And it's only kind of messes up in the market where the price of the bond would vary, right? Well, first of all, if you're going to lend somebody money for a year, there's not really a bond. There's no chance of appreciation, right? You're just going to get your money, hopefully, and your money back. So I'm going to say it's a little less complicated in that regard because the variables are less.
But yeah, it's subject to less volatility, probably, and it's a more predictable flow of cash. So in that respect, the accounting is different, but in the end, it's just a different kind of fundraising for the company.
But the real rate of interest and something is risk free, say the government, or I used to say GE, but a five-star corporation or something like that, and a 1 or 2 year note. What you're really talking about is what is the real rate of interest at the base level? I mean, what am I going to get? And that number has maneuvered through the centuries, depending on supply and demand for money, which there is, by the way. It could be 2%, it could be 2.5%, it could be 3%, it could be 3.5%. But it's not zero. I mean, it's not 10, right, for real interest. But now you come into, okay, what am I loaning you? And if I'm loaning you dollars, the assumption is the dollar vis-a-vis all the other stuff being a currency, it's supposed to have some sort of a stabilized value. So at the end of the year, when I get my dollars or you get your dollars back from me, that the dollar price has, based on all the other stuff there is, hasn't moved very much, if at all. So we're saying, but if we know that the dollar or the pound or the yen or whatever the hell it is somehow depreciating by 10% a year, you're going to say, all right, wait, now we have a new variable. Okay, not only do I want my 3% for you using my money, or 2.5% or whatever, the thing that you just, that I just lent you is going to degrade in value by 10% in the next year. So you get to use it and I don't. So when you pay it back, it's only worth 90 cents on the buck. So by the way, you got to make that up as well. So I want the 10% decline in what I just gave you, plus I want the real rate of interest. So if the inflation rate's 10%, the real rate, or the rate that I charge you should be 13 or thereabouts, right? And because why would it be? I mean, if things are going to degrade along the way, why would I expect the same piece back? Because if otherwise I could buy an asset myself, and the next year I can sell the asset and get 10% more of the dollars, right? Because that's the definition of what I'm just talking about.
Okay. All right. So we have this agreement on this. So you were going somewhere with
it. Yeah. But now yesterday we had inflation numbers came out hotter than anybody expected. We're talking about, 0.7 for God's sake, which comes out to 0.6. You multiply it by 12, and what are you getting? You're talking 7.2% for a year, right? I mean, it's up there. So, and yet you would think that even though a lot of this is priced in, I mean, this is not a surprise, it was a little bit of a surprise. And so instead of the interest rates going up, they went down yesterday to where your 10-year rate is actually under 1.5. But a lot of things could happen in 10 years. You could actually be, I'm going to say, foolish enough to think that it's all transitory and actually it's going to come back down to where it was last month. Now, just remember, this one thing, no matter what, whether you agree or don't agree with anything else I'm saying here, this I think you need to agree with. When you say transitory, you have to be in one of two camps. One is, if the price of used cars was up, I think it was, 7% last month and 10% the month before, you have to define in your brain what you think transitory means. It either means that when it stops, we run back to the number we were at the end of March, all right, and used car prices essentially drop 17% and go back to where we started this fiasco, or 17% has become the new normal, and 2 or 3 months from now, after maybe another 10%, that it's going to plateau out there 27% higher than they were in March. And they are not the same thing. Are they? I mean, absolutely not the same thing.
No, they're not the same thing at all. They're not the same thing at all. And, how often do we see prices roll back on products?
Rarely.
Maybe a little bit when there's extraordinary events, but it's really just in commodity type of areas. Gasoline can be, as an example, of something that can be a roller coaster ride. We have periods of high prices at the pump, and we have periods of lower prices at the pump. And that's been going on for quite a while. So there are places where it may be transitory, but there are other places where I'm kind of thinking, no, we're just really looking at the new high price, and next year when it doesn't go up anymore, but it's still high, we're going to say, see, it was transitory. It didn't. It was 0% this year.
Well, lumber, for instance, went up. What did we have last week? Maybe it's somebody else telling us it was. Went up like 3 times, and now it's come back. So say it went up from $2 a 2x4 to $7.50, or $2.50 to $7.50, and now it's back down to $6.50 or $6. Now that's somewhat a relief, but it sure as hell not 2.5. Right?
Right.
But when it comes to pricing...
Yeah, that's what I mean. It may roll back a little bit, but is it going to roll back to where it was?
No, and I'm going to say no. I'm going to say probably no. But now we end up with, okay, now, for me and for everybody who's listening, whether you are an investor or not, anybody who has a nickel, whether you put it under the bed or whether you put it in a safety deposit box or whether you invest in Bitcoin or whatever, you are an investor. You may or may not be a good one, but you are one. Even if you put it, you got $100,000 and it's safely in a briefcase under your bed, you're an investor. It just happens to be in the underbed investment column, right? So you can't ever get away with it, away from it if you have money. Okay, even though you think you may be, you're not. So now you sit there and say, okay, now, why would those interest rates go up? What would possess, why would they go down? What would possess, let's forget the 10-year. Because a lot of things can happen in 10-year, and you might actually believe this BS that all this stuff is transitory, and by the way, we're all going to be fine in 2 years, and we're back down to zero, and oh, by the way, the Fed controls these rates and all this other stuff. The Fed does to a certain extent, and I'll say the reason why that is, Kevin, is absolute fear. Because nowhere in any kind of history that I've ever come across, here in this country anyway, I haven't read, you know, the full thing on the Weimar Republic and other places, are you competing against a central bank that doesn't seem to have any discipline whatsoever? I mean, these guys will be $15, $20 trillion, they don't care, on their balance sheet. They don't want these rates up. And so now yesterday, I'm just asking, no matter who it is, if your mom, my mom, anybody's mom, hopefully most people's are still alive, ours aren't, unfortunately. Of course, you know, Kevin and I go back long enough to where we knew our moms, each other's moms. They knew us as much as they knew their kid, almost. I don't know if that was a good idea or bad.
We go back to being young enough where they could yell at us.
Absolutely, both of us. They almost didn't care. But what would possess somebody, even if you buy the BS about transitory, there's not going to be any transitory for the next 6 months, is there, or 4 months? So let's leak out 6 months. Why exactly would I give my money to somebody for? They're telling us yesterday that in the next year, the interest rate's going to be, or the inflation's going to be 7% or 6%. I mean, they're telling us it's right there, even with their numbers, which are way less than mine. But let's believe them for a while. Now, what would possess somebody to lend money to somebody for 6 months for like 0.8%? It's an absolute losing transaction, Kevin. And I don't think the market, the market price ever should be a losing transaction. Now, the question is, why is that? I mean, all the people yesterday that were on Fast Money and all the other stuff that I listened to on CNBC, every person said, oh, the Fed's not going to listen. So the Fed is going to drive the population into basically a horse bleep transaction. And how are they doing that? They're doing that by printing money and by buying up the 10-year, the 5-year, the 1-year. Now, what possesses them to do that, Kevin? I mean, it's just, why are they in the market in an economy now that appears to be, you know, in the stages of coming back fairly strongly? What is the purpose? I mean, obviously, the federal debt itself is probably one of the purposes, because if the interest rates go up enough, they don't have enough money to pay for it. But this is a zero-sum game. Now, at some point, for a period of 20 years, can you print enough money to drive the stuff down when you have when your inflation going up, and every year you're going to make the person who gives somebody a loan take essentially a 10% hit or 7% hit on what he just gave somebody? Does anybody think that's a long-term solution to anything? I'm not talking about the politics of it. I'm not talking about the trade today. I'm not saying buy or sell bonds. God, no, because I'm very afraid of the Fed. I got news for you. Me and my clients at PTI are not. It's like going up against Mike Tyson, right? I'm not doing that. I can't print $1 trillion and say here's mine, you know, and put mine in the ring. I mean, but what are we doing? I mean, for a week or two, or for COVID, or for a little while, I guess I'll roll with anything. But this is nuts. I think. I mean, because you're forcing your population into. And on the other hand, you have companies that are borrowing at ridiculously low rates, and some people can't. And now we're going to put up $250 billion to companies to bring back stuff to this country. And these are the same companies that sent it someplace else. No matter, I mean, it's like a baseball manager, the guy who screwed up the team, and then all of a sudden he has one decent year because he gets Babe Ruth on his team, and all of a sudden he's a hero again. I mean, can we get out of this mentality anywhere, or is it impossible?
Probably impossible. We still have an institutional problem, and that is the inability to say three simple words. You know, we're like the Fonz trying to say I was wrong.
Yeah.
I was. We can't do it. isn't the first step of fixing any kind of an institutionalized problem, you know, whether it's in your personal life, or whether it is, or we're talking about macroeconomic policy, isn't the first step to admit to having a problem?
Well, I know. I think it is. At AA, I'm a drunk. If you don't say that, you're out. You know, what's the point?
Yeah. and everything, you know, nothing else is going to work until we make that admission, and we're not prepared to make that admission.
Well, we'll talk about sports.
So instead, we stay knee deep in poop, and of course, the smell is familiar, so we just keep going with it.
The thing that bothers me the most, and this is probably an experience thing or age, whatever you want to call it, they don't seem to have any respect for the consequences. And you and I have seen the consequences, and they really suck. I mean, nobody wants to go through the 70s again where every savings and loan went under damn near, or every bank, if it didn't go under, they damn near did. Nobody wants to see industries thrown out and things being totally upside down like that. Nobody wants to see that. And yet, we're acting like it can't happen again or something. We're also acting like that the Fed always maintains control when we've seen them in the last how many years being out of control, where they screwed up to the point where they're panicking. What are they going to do when the average American says enough? I'm still making 40 grand a year, and now the stuff I used to buy last year is 20% higher. I mean, can we handle that now? We don't have. Maybe we can. I mean, we don't have unions that have any push in Washington, so there's not going to be any sort of cost of living increases that are normal. You're sure as hell not going to get them out of. Does anybody think that the Home Depot, who's gleefully raising their prices by 30% or 100% or 200% on the lumber, thinks that they need to do that? They need to give somebody 100% raise in the lumber aisle, the guy that's working in there? I'm thinking no. I mean, none of this is in place because the thing that I kind of put two and two together, Kevin. I put what I consider to be an amazingly lax, not just lax from the government standpoint, from the population standpoint. Nobody seems to care about antitrust. Nobody seems to care about concentrations in industries. Nobody seems to care that there's people now that have probably never bought anything in terms of building that wasn't bought at their local Home Depot or local Menards, depending on what state they're in. Or maybe a Lowe's, that they only have one or two places to go to, and they're perfectly happy with it. So the idea of if you drop a 1970s inflation into our current concentrated mix of providers, I think it's an absolute disaster. Now, I hope I'm wrong, but am I wrong to at least worry about that?
No, you're not wrong, and why do we tolerate it? I don't think people know better. I don't think, you know, we don't teach antitrust in high school anymore. That's where I first learned about it. These are things I know because I get students, I get adults, you know, working adults. And we get into some of the antitrust stuff and they go, oh, that's interesting. Well, then that shouldn't be legal, should it? No, it shouldn't, but it is. Because we tolerate it. And, you know, this is, you know, we're so systematically broken, and there's so much that needs to be fixed, and what we wind up doing is throwing a lot of funding at things that don't work to the exclusion of things that do.
Well, I think you're right. But anyway, hey, all right, let's shift gears. Why is everybody in the world pulling hamstrings? This guy in the socks hurt pretty bad.
Well, I know why I pull hamstrings. It's because I'm old and broken. But everybody in on the Sox game last night, they had something like the numbers of people that have gone on the injured list this year compared to 2019. They said don't compare it to last year. Last year wasn't normal. And you know, it's like we're in the 500s now, where the whole year of 2019 was in the 300s of players.
What
I don't know why that would be. It certainly that you would be asking the question of what does the shortened season from last year have to do with it? I don't know an answer that makes sense to me on that.
Can I lob one out there? And I don't. Maddie will probably, because we didn't play baseball last year. People spent the entire year in the weight room, and they've got themselves imbalanced.
But but we did play baseball, and we played baseball for 60 games. Wouldn't it have manifested itself then?
Well, I mean, a lot of these guys that are some of the dudes that are being hurt are so young, they just coming up from the minors. Well, yeah, you're, I mean, yeah, it should have. It should have. I mean, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we obviously had a substantially different season last year, and so that would be the question. But it's not the answer. That would be the question to ask: is how is it tied to that? And it may very well be. I'm not saying it isn't. I'm just saying right now that's no more than a guess for anybody.
Oh yeah, I'd said that. It's a guess, but it's. It's
I'm not criticizing what you said. I'm just saying in general, and I don't know what to tell you. It's just really, really strange how this is unfolded, and maybe it'll all slide into something normal for the second half of the season. Maybe the second half of the season is going to wind up looking like a typical churn on the injured list. I don't know. It's fun to speculate, I suppose.
Yeah, you just don't. I mean, every time a guy runs a first, you wonder if he's going to. I mean, you look at the ball players, you don't see anybody in the locker room, thank God. But, I mean, guys look different than they did in 1975. I mean, the individual people are a lot more muscular, a lot heavier, which in some ways is good. In some ways, I'm not so sure it is. I'm just speculating, as I usually do, just lobbing them out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, you used to hear that all the time when people were talking about, the number of home runs and, is it juiced ball and all that, and maybe the ball is juiced, but then they're saying, see, 185-pound shortstop is hitting all these home runs. Got news for you. Willie Mays was a 185-pound center fielder.
Yeah. Well, what, I mean, Andre Dawson was an incredibly strong man, and what did the guy weigh, 195?
Probably no more than that.
S&P futures up 6, NASDAQ futures up 25.
So training is different, but go ahead, go to the
break. We'll be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim O. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. S&P futures up 675. NASDAQ futures up 27 and a quarter. Dow futures up 65. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 80.5%, FTSE up 44.6%, CAC around up 50.8%. So moderately bullish across the board. Not huge rallies, but solid rallies for sure. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 9, call that flat. Shanghai down 21.6. Hang Seng up 103.4 again. Those guys are, every morning, they seem mixed and kind of contrary to the rest of the world. I don't know why that is. Yesterday, the Dow was up 19. S&P was up almost 20. NASDAQ was up 108, so the Dow was lagging. The Dow has been ahead of everybody, and all of a sudden they're lagging a little bit. Bonds, 1.44 is the 10-year rate, which is stunning compared to what after with the CPI number yesterday. The Bund is down to minus 0.27, and that was probably the other big news yesterday, was that the European Central Bank said they're doing another $2.2 trillion. They're going to pour into the system in the next year and a half. That's a lot of money. They've got to own like every single bond over there now. They reached the last time I looked, they were owning 70% of half the bond issues. It's crazy. Japan minus point, positive 0.04, so they're actually going down as well. Oil down up 32 cents, 70.61. Brent up 29 cents, 72.81. Natural gas up 11 cents, 3.26. They must be using natural gas for power out west due to the drought and stuff, because it's going up in the summertime. It's not supposed to. RBOB unchanged at 221. Gold down 470, 1891. Silver up 17 cents, 2820. Copper up 8 cents, 457. So copper continues to creep. We've got crypto up 689. Bitcoin up to 37,345. I guess they got the inflation win there. We're not sure. Anybody got for us traffic, weather, sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start here on a Friday morning. No delays to speak of in the area at the moment. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Eisenhower, traffic starting to build a little bit, but off to a good start. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all quiet. Weather today, it's going to be a sunny, very pleasant mid-June day. We'll reach a high of 85. Lots of sunshine. Right now it's crystal clear and 74 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 71. In sports, the White Sox beat the Blue Jays last night, taking 2 of 3 from Toronto. Final was 5-2 in that one after a good outing from Dallas Keuchel. Cubs are off, and they'll host the St. Louis Cardinals this afternoon. And it's being called Reopening Day, or Opening Day 2.0. as it will be 100% capacity, no masks at Wrigley Field. So should be a lot of buzz around the ballpark as the first-place Cubs take on the Cardinals. That's a 121st pitch.
So are they going to tell you they need to pay the vendors $12 an hour so the beers are $20?
Good question. Diamondbacks were off last night. They'll host the Angels at 6:40 Arizona time tonight. And Game 3 of the Western Conference semifinals between the Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets is back in action tonight. 7 p.m. Arizona time tip. The Suns lead that series 2-0. Chief.
We had a talk yesterday with Lou regarding insurance and players that work out. Well, you're going to do something away from the facility unless you live next door. If you're going to go for a jog, you're going to go around the bike, whatever. I'm just saying. He was talking about the tackle in Denver that they don't want to pay because he tore his Achilles with a non-supervised workout. I don't know what he was doing, but anyway. So one of our listeners writes in, our friend Paul says, there's a couple people that just, friends of his that just moved to Florida. I guess one of this is from the Sarasota Herald Tribune. that flood insurance now in Florida, they've got a $16,000 policy provided only $155,000 worth of coverage, which is 11% of the home's value. And he's got a buddy that bought a house. Where the hell's Amelia Island? I don't know much about Florida. Last week,
that's east of Jacksonville, up north, right on the Atlantic coast.
So that's where some of the hurricanes have been hitting all up there, right? But anyway, friend bought $1 million home on Amelia Island last week, and the quote was $200,000 per year, which is 20% of the home's value. That's kind of a lot. You're going to get totally wrecked every 5 years. I think that seems like a little rich, doesn't it? Just saying.
It does.
So how many insurance companies do you think they have left in Florida? Like three or something? We don't seem to pay attention to any of this, do we? And then every once in a while you have to listen, like in my industry, oh, the SEC is clearly looking at this. The SEC is all over this one. You can only imagine the SEC is watching. Give me a break. What do these people do all day? You do have to wonder, Kevin. It's like, I think one of the best commercials was in terms of memory. Remember the one where the guy was worried about when his car was finally going to get fixed? And he calls the guy up and he says, don't worry, I got my best two men on the job right now. Best two men are on your car right now, and there's two big fat guys eating their lunch sitting on his hood.
Sitting right on the car, yep.
Yep, they're on. I got my best men on your car right now. Well, they were on it all right. Anyway, so what do you think we sort of brought it up, Manny, what do you think the economics of the reopening of baseball is? Is it, are they going to make up for last year? Is it, well, first of all, the first part of this year, do you think we're talking break even for baseball? I mean, some places it's been uneven. Matter of fact, last night, the two basketball games, one of the places looks like it was pretty full, and the other one wasn't. You notice that, Manny?
Yeah, it depends on the state. Well, Texas has been open full for baseball all along, so the Texas teams have been filling their stadiums.
Well, Milwaukee wasn't very open last night. It didn't seem like it. I mean, there were people there, but they weren't.
Yeah, I don't know what the status of Wisconsin is.
I didn't see anybody in like the first 30 rows. Did you, Manny? I didn't. And they didn't show the upper deck. I mean, there were people there, but it was kind of like the Bulls when they opened. There was still nobody downstairs. But the other game, who was the second game? They looked like they were pretty full.
Utah.
Were they pretty open? I mean, it looked like they were.
Looked like they were 100% open. Milwaukee, I don't know. I'm trying to find what the rule is. But to me, it looked maybe two-thirds or three-quarters full in Milwaukee, something like that.
Yeah, so, I think Milwaukee is also different than the rest of the state of Wisconsin.
That could very well be,
so
too.
Milwaukee may still be a little tighter. In fact, you know what? Now that you say that, I know they're just finally getting to 100% for the Brewers, that they're going to allow 100% there. So if not right now, very soon.
Well, naive me.
I doubt that Fiserv Forum is. What did Milwaukee do last night, by the way?
They ended up winning at the end. I watched that.
Milwaukee is allowing 95% capacity.
Well, they still have the players sitting
there. Tell me how that makes sense.
I know.
What is that last 5% going to do to somebody?
It's a good question.
You know what? I think it's like the bottom 8 or 9 rows. Because they still have the players with the chairs 20 feet apart. So they're not.
Oh, okay. So they're what they're doing is keeping fans away from the players. Because it's an aerosol. The aerosols would never drift around inside the arena. they know to stop at those last 8 rows.
Well, plus, you're out there.
We have been so incredibly stupid. You know, in the name of science, we have done some of the most unscientific things imaginable.
Well, the guys around the court.
And it would be amusing, except for the fact that it's completely crushed the economy.
Yeah, well, I like the part where you're out in the middle of the game, and then you walk out to your seat, which is 10 feet away from anybody else, and you put on a mask. That makes kind of zero sense. I now move.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Or the coach wears a mask and pulls it down to yell at the ref, to talk to the players, or anything like that. You know, so any interaction that might matter, you of course pull the mask down over your chin.
Oh yeah.
By the way, it says it shows how the optics on TV are clearly deceptive. because we were completely backwards. So the Bucks are allowing 95%. The Jazz are allowing 75%.
But they're allowing them the whole stadium.
Well,
allegedly.
I don't know about that. I mean, that's what you're making up. I don't know. I haven't read anything like that. But the Bucks are actually allowing more fans than the Jazz.
Well, I might be wrong. Hopefully I'm not making it up. I mean, well, like the Bruins. I watched the Bruins play last week. I mean, they could have been 85%, but they were seated all the way down to the glass. I mean, you didn't.
Boston is 100% capacity.
Okay. How did they get? Massachusetts was one of the most conservative states early on.
Beginning May 29th, they started allowing 100% capacity.
Okay. Well, some, like I said,
So what, you know, speaking of COVID, is Fauci now starting to go down the Cuomo path where he's going from St. Fauci down to becoming vilified? Do you think that's starting to happen?
I hope not.
Was there anyone else like me who never looked at him as St. Fauci and never vilified him either and just didn't really care what he said every day?
I think there were a few like that.
That's where I was the entire time. I never really paid much attention to anything he said, and I never vilified him either. He was a guy that was put out in front by the Trump administration and then by the Biden administration, and I didn't really listen to him at any time.
Well, I, you guys...
My brother calls him Dr. No.
but I just think when you put somebody in that kind of a position in today's world, the arrows are flying at you from a million different directions. Can you imagine, even though I'm not really too happy with...
Well, I understand that, Tom, yeah. But now with the emails released as a FOIA request, what we're really seeing is that that he and others in a small group of people were involved in advocating for and funding the research that was going on in the Wuhan lab, and as a result, they scrambled to cover it up and to cover up their involvement and. To the detriment of our ability to deal with this in any rational way. That's not a big logical leap. That's what happened.
I understand that. Very, very early on, and I'll never be able to find the documents, but very early on, I think it was you, Kevin, we talked about there seemed to be, because I'd read a few articles from scientists here that seemed to really know the scientists in the lab in Wuhan. And we're talking about there's no way that it got out on purpose because these guys are honorable people and they've been dealing with them for a bunch of years and so forth. And like nobody there would do that. And it turns out I don't think they really did it on purpose. I don't believe that. I mean, of course I could be
wrong. No, I think most people agree with that. Most people don't think so.
But I always,
when we talk about it leaking out of the lab, you know, what does that mean? Well, what it means is people working in the lab got infected, didn't know it, and left, you know, and took it out into the world with them.
Right. I mean, let's put this way. I did not know about how much we funded the place or anything like that, but it was seemingly fairly obvious that we at least knew a lot of the people there. Let's put this way. It wasn't just some lab in China we knew nothing about. There was definitely a connection between our scientists and theirs, and maybe the people at the WHO. I mean, I don't think anything like that can happen.
Well, yeah, because we grant funded them. So, well, yeah,
but I also think a lot of those guys probably went to school here. I mean, there's connections in all these high tech places, right? I mean, it's not like the biggest atomic physicist in China doesn't know the biggest atomic physicist here. I mean, they probably went to Stanford together, for God's sake, right? I mean.
And I'm not arguing against that. What I am saying, though, is that President Obama put a moratorium on gain-of-function research in the United States because thinking it was dangerous, and so the workaround was for the federal government to fund a local probably not-for-profit organization, which then turned around and issued a grant to the lab, and they all knew exactly what they were doing, and so when this came to the forefront, they scrambled very much to cover it up. They worked really, really hard to discredit anybody who tried to espouse the idea that the in Wuhan, including, you know, destroying careers. This was pretty insidious. This was not a good chapter here at all.
Kevin,
and what did they have to gain by doing that? I'd like to know.
Well, they wanted to cover their tracks because they would otherwise be held responsible for this.
Matty, you always at that level, you always cover stuff up. It's incredible.
I'm not talking about the Chinese side.
Our side.
I get why they covered it up. What did the U.S. have to gain by covering it up?
If they funded it, they didn't want to be held responsible for it, especially the individuals who were involved in funding it, because they were doing an end run around the around the moratorium that had been issued.
Your first instinct in any sort of political situation or on a board level anywhere is to cover something up.
Well, that's true. I know.
Absolutely.
Well, just like anybody, when you make a mistake, the first thing you think of is, can I get away with this or not?
Yeah, does anybody know about it?
Right. Whether you're actually going to actively lie or cover it up, it is your first instinct. Can I get away with this or not? Okay. And then you think about it, and then you go, okay, here's the right thing to do, usually, and then you do the right thing.
Well, if any...
Yeah, so now Fauci's on the rehab tour, going and doing interviews with people and referring to himself in the third person and saying, if you're attacking Dr. Fauci, you're attacking science.
God.
But look at, Kevin, this is... I don't know, I'm starting to get this routine where I look at people's reactions in this play. I mean, look what happens in Chicago here. We had this metal recycling plant up where Maddie and I live. And all of a sudden, the ups move in there, and they don't like the place. You know, it has particulate this and that. And there's a million, plus if you go there in the morning, there's a million.
Well, not to mention there's an explosion every 2 years.
Well, but there's also a million guys that you probably don't want in the neighborhood lining up with their trucks full of metal. So if you're the uppie mom in the million-dollar house four blocks away, this is an outrage, even though that place was there before you were. So, okay, we got to get the hell out of here. So after years of fighting and like Maddie says, a couple of misplaced explosions, they moved a place down to the east side where they think nobody cares. All of a sudden they get down there and now you've got with the, you know, Black Lives Matter and everything. What are you doing? You're taking stuff from a white neighborhood and you're putting a black neighborhood. You know, there's not many people live around there. Now look what you're doing. You're screwing us because we're black and not because we're white. So someday, somewhere, somebody's going to say, you know, what the hell with it. Let's just put this crap on a barge in Lake Michigan and ship it over to China. They'll be happy to do it. They don't care. I'm not saying they shouldn't care, but they don't care. And all of a sudden, 20 years from now, hey, what the hell? What? How did this scrap business get to the point now if we want to build an aircraft carrier, we got to buy our metal back from China? Well, duh. Why do you think it happened? I mean, nobody wants these labs here. We think we need it. It's a progression. It's not just... Finally, somebody said, okay, we don't want to do this here. Let's do it there. They don't care. They're doing it anyway. They're the ones with the bat caves, literally. I mean, am I wrong?
But they were 1,000 miles away from the lab, and they tried to tell us that it was just a natural transmission.
They also said it was in the open-air market. But I'm saying this is a progression. We don't want any of this stuff here. We shove it over there, and now we're mad it's over there. I mean, what do you want? Right?
Right, but the difference here is that we really didn't want it over there, except for a handful of people that decided they knew better.
Well, where did we want it? Were we saying we don't want to do research on this stuff?
We didn't want it at all. When we put a moratorium on it, it was because it was dangerous research.
Okay.
Now, there are advocates for it, and they, you know, with a legitimate argument, and that is that this is the kind of research where we can learn to cope with this kind of stuff. There are other people who are saying it's also the same kind of research you would do if you wanted to create bioweapons, and that doesn't mean it was intentionally released, but it could have been bioweapons research as well. And who's willing to put that past the Chinese Communist Party? But nevertheless, whatever the reason for the research, people in the lab got infected. We know that, and before they knew they were infected, they were outspreading it in the world.
Right. It appears to be what happened.
That's what appears to have happened. That's where the preponderance of evidence points, and knowing that, you had people in government positions and people who received government grant funds that they turned around and passed on to that kind of research, who were saying, "Oh hell, I better cover my tracks on this, or we're going to get blamed for the worldwide pandemic."
Well, I'm not so sure that I don't know where I come down on this. Where would you, Maddie? I mean, do we want to just leave the stuff in Africa, in those areas where Ebola and those things are, where we know they are? Do we want to just leave the stuff there, or do we want to get some kind of research to find out what the hell is there in case it ever does get out? We maybe will have a way to deal with it. That's kind of a tough call, and it's the question is, how well do you trust your people?
Well, it is, but the call that was made, and this is, you know, this is kind of outside of the Trump administration. This was definitely an Obama administration call, was saying, no, we want to stop. We want to know before we do this, we want to stop, and we want to say, don't do it because we're not comfortable with it. And so the response to that was, that wasn't the politicians saying, oh, I don't care if you send it to China. The response to that was the bureaucrats saying, okay, well, we'll find a workaround to this and make it continue to happen, despite what the policy is. And that's where it happened. And, of course, you know, of course, Trump was oblivious at the start, and then, of course, and when it broke out, like he always did, Trump gets really enamored of Fauci and very impressed by him and sort of, you know, follows his lead on everything until such time as he finally figures out that, no, this is not the lead to be following, and this and it came into conflict. And then, of course, from the media standpoint, you know, the coverage of that dynamic is 100% tied into you know, their political agendas on it, and so we never got decent reporting on it. We never even got curiosity on it.
I can only imagine.
Well, I can say,
go ahead, man.
6 months ago, or maybe longer, maybe 8 or 9 months ago, I never watched 60 Minutes. In fact, I bet I've watched it 5 times in my entire life. But for some reason, it was on after a Sunday afternoon football game, and it was still left on, and I was making pasta in my kitchen, and it was on, and my hands were covered. So,
I didn't get the invite.
And so I, you know, I could.
The same way I learned about Breaking Bad, by the way, the first show, but keep going.
Really? So anyway, they had somebody on that was a scientist, an American scientist, that seemed to be non-politically affiliated at all, just a scientist, and he said, I have evidence that this 100% came out of a lab, and I am being basically muzzled. And they did a whole thing on it, and you know, they in some ways made him sound like he was crazy, but in some ways they gave him a platform to share his thesis, or whatever you want to call it. And it was fascinating, and to me it seemed like much more logical than someone eating a bat and spreading it that way. And I, you know, I think it flared up for a week or two, and then that was it. But there was some reporting on it, because I saw it.
And then it was systematically shot down after that, which was crazy.
Well, one of the tells was that the SARS-1, they knew right away it came from a bat to something. They knew what animal it was, and they knew in the MERS, that thing came through camels. I would never have guessed that. But they were able to, the scientists were able to find the transmission or the link within, what, a couple of months, Kevin? And this, with the fact that they kept dragging on and could never find it, these guys are pretty good. The fact they never found it had me believing that maybe there wasn't another animal link. Maybe it did come out of the lab.
Yeah, but like Matt said, there was a lot of logic to it, and the lack of curiosity, the unwillingness to pursue it, was probably based on politics as much as anything, and again, that was to the detriment of a lot of people.
Could you imagine having a
suffering the disease? Because until you pursue it, until you understand it, you can't really do much about it. And we saw the same thing. Like, we saw the same thing with treatments, that we were so vaccine focused that we were not willing to consider any other treatments as valid, and there were financial incentives to do that. So it's, you know, this has been kind of handled every way wrong at pretty much every step along the way.
Can you imagine?
We've
something.
Had a lot of conversations about that over the last year and a half.
Well, can you imagine, Kevin, this debate as to whether or not the thing, you know, we should research it or not, and these are the risks, these are the benefits. Could you imagine that debate being in the House of Representatives? I can't even go there.
No, in a dysfunctional organization like that, no.
Well, just, I mean, I
absolutely can't. But the, where I'm going with it, though, is I'm more concerned that that policy was based on the need to cover up, and therefore a lot of you know a lot of things happened. There, you know, there was also factored in there the inability to say I was wrong. We talked about this with economics earlier, and it was the same thing with the pandemic, where nobody could ever say they were wrong. That sometimes we see things sort of step by step morph into a different position, but by and large, if there were so many things that seemed obvious by last May or June, that if people would have just said stop right now, let's reverse course on this, we would have been better off.
Oh, you become absolutely a slave to your
and there was just no ability to do that.
Well, why is it any different than when I started the show saying the Fed is committed to buying these bonds even at in the last day they know they don't need to? They're going to because they said they're going to. The thing that is in the back,
and we have to learn to do better.
Well, the thing that is, I'll be brief with this, but maybe I'll talk about it next. I only got a minute, but the thing that I'm thinking about here, stuff that pops into my feeble brain. There's a book called Catastrophe out, and it has to do with a naturally occurring volcanic eruption in like 450 AD, to where. Anyway, the Earth was amazingly cooled down for a period of years. And you can see it in all the histories that written or otherwise of everywhere around the world. And that's what caused the bubonic plague, which kind of resided in the same place like Ebola in Central Africa someplace where nobody cared about it. It essentially caused the plague to get out of there because every rat in the area kind of went a little further than they normally did. And it made it to the coast and changed the world. Totally. Not good either. Obviously, the bubonic plague. Now, my question is, Kevin, I don't know the answer to that question. Would I, if we had science today, which obviously they didn't have in 450 AD, do I not want to know about the bubonic plague until something like that happens and it gets out on its own? Or do I want to go to find out about it so I think I'm prepared for it? That's a real tough debate. I don't know.
It is a tough debate, Tom. And if that's the reasoning behind, you know, doing the end run and funding the research. Okay, I understand that argument. I'm not saying it's not. It is neither legitimate nor worth considering. But the response to that is to make your case not to do an end run around.
I agree.
The requirements that the administration puts on you.
Well, real quick, the Chinese have now a rover wandering around.
Sooner or later, you got to salute and say yes, sir, when the boss says do something.
Well, I mean, we have the Chinese running around Mars now on a rover, right? They're the second place they've got there. We got there first, obviously. But how many people back when we went to the moon in 1969 were convinced the rocks you bring back, if you don't figure out a way to make sure they're held somewhere, what if some virus comes off one of those rocks and kills everybody? Was it really necessary to go to the moon? I mean, these debates are all over the place, right?
Yeah. I mean, not denying the debates. I'm denying the tactics.
SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures up 16. Come back with Mr. Wayne Matz. We haven't had him in a while. This should be interesting. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Wayne Weber on the, Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 22. We have Mr. Wayne Matson with us. Wayne, how are you?
Very good. How's everything up in Chicago?
See, now you're supposed to know. You and your buddy were supposed to come up and have a drink with me.
Well, that's still in the cards. I couldn't go anywhere until I had my second vaccination. I did that back in February, and then I got spring fever, and I did what everybody does when they, want to get out of the house for a while. I bought a new car and drove to Los Angeles and back. So
nice.
I almost took a detour to Chicago, but called it home.
Were you?
I like it.
Were you? Did you get the convertible, the midlife crisis thing, or just the regular car?
No, I thought about the Mustang convertible and doing Route 66, but I just decided, let me go see the Grand Canyon for the first time. I lowered my expectations.
Did you walk down in there?
I did not do that. As a matter of fact, I'm acrophobic. I don't mind airplanes, and I've actually flown planes, but when the World Trade Center, I didn't do well, the Seattle Space Needle, this Willis Tower, formerly the Sears Tower, and I got to the edge of that Grand Canyon, and my knees started to turn to rubber bands, and I got to see it, but the idea of, hiking down that thing 5 miles, I decided to head back to the hotel and you could always
get on the mule,
ponder the great sight. I mean, it's breathtaking. I just pondered what I had seen over a couple of cocktails.
Well, it's like skiing. I mean, how high up you are, the ground is only the same distance.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Of course, I wouldn't want to get on
ski lodge and surf.
I wouldn't want to get on the mule.
Ski lodge and serves drinks afterwards, right?
I hear the mules walk right by the edge. I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, I talk to people who've done it, and in one case, a guy went and his wife went down to the bottom, and then the wife got injured, and they brought in a helicopter to lift her out to go to the hospital. And he said, "What about me?" And he said, "Well, you're not injured. I'm a nice like that guy."
Well, they were right. He wasn't injured. Walk up there, buddy. Get in the car and go.
That's right.
Well, you have to. If you have enough advance warning, there is a lack of a better term. There's a hotel on the bottom, right? So you could stay a night and then walk out the next day, right?
That sounds like a good idea, but I just at my advanced age, I decided. My idea of roughing it now is having to stay at a Motel 6. I hope they're not one of your sponsors.
the Motel anything is, those things are now becoming, for young people, I don't know if Maddie's ever done this, I don't want to accuse him and his wife, but a lot of people, young people like to go do that and throw the quarter in the machine and try that out for sex, and, The thing,
right?
Do you ever stay at a place like that, Benny, where you sort of quarter it and the whole bed buzzes?
I know what you're talking about. I've never actually seen one of those in person.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
Yeah, they were quite interesting. They also had an unusual selection on their cable TV offerings
to go along with the buzzing bed.
That's right.
So anywho, but you had a good time. Good for you. You just wanted to get, when was the last time you were in Washington?
I actually was just in Washington 2 weeks ago. A friend of mine passed away, and went to his funeral, and it's slowly reopening in Washington, but it's not the Washington that I knew. It's for a lot of different reasons. Security is pretty tight, and of course, a lot of people are still telecommuting. It's okay as far as the traffic is concerned. Traffic is not as bad as it used to be, but that may change as people go back to the office.
Well, it seems like the hardest people to get back to work are public employees. Imagine that.
Yeah, and some apparently some agencies have decided this has worked out pretty good, so they've told their older employees who might be more susceptible to getting a virus to just keep working from home.
Well, the people here
get paid for it.
Yeah, the people here at the Fed. I know a couple of guys that have moved far enough away where it's not even commuting distance. I mean, we had some. Who was on the other day? Maddie was telling us in New York. Some of the financial firms now have totally changed. They want everybody back at work, a lot of them. And there's some people that move from New York to Miami, and they're like, "Wait a minute!
It's happening even around me. The houses are selling hotcakes. Apparently, some employees have been told, "Hey, we're going to keep telecommuting." And by the way, as long as you got a good internet connection, we don't care where you live. So, I think we're seeing here in Florida a huge outflux from the cities, especially in the Northeast, Philly, New York, Boston, and Washington.
I think a few of those people are getting rudely yanked back.
that may cause some domestic family issues when it happens, but it could happen, sure, certainly. Well,
we have obviously a lot of changes in policy since Biden's in. Some are already out there and some aren't. What do you see as the big stress points right now? I don't know. We talk a lot about on the show our approach to China, but clearly on our show, there's a bazillion different pieces to this China relations stuff, and there's no way we can cover.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody in Washington can cover, even if you make that your life's work. I mean, there's so much stuff going on between the business stuff back and forth, the good stuff between each other, and the crummy stuff between each other. Try and put your finger on that. It seems to me like Biden's going all the way back in. If it's good for business, it's okay. We don't care. Am I right on that, or am I wrong? I mean, he's sounding the game that we're still going to be tough, but in reality, it looks like it's wide open.
Well, one thing, for almost four decades, he represented Delaware in the Senate, and Delaware, of course, is the official legal headquarters for many corporations. So. Joe Biden's going to do exactly what Wall Street is comfortable with, I think we may see his rhetoric at one level, but as you say, what's actually happening is a different story, because he doesn't want to affect. I think he understands. Everything is so interconnected and interrelated as far as the economy is concerned. I don't expect to see him throwing down any gauntlets. The rhetoric's a different issue. But one thing I think we will see movement on, at least I hope, my trip across the United States wasn't, was to get out of the house, but I also, this infrastructure issue, it's important, because I went through certain states where the roads are absolutely atrocious. The bridges don't look too hot either, as far as, you can see the rust on some of these bridges. Louisiana is absolutely the worst state when it comes to driving. The interstates are in bad shape. The U.S. highways are in bad shape. So I think we may see some movement there, because I think people that are, you know, starting to commute now after a year are seeing this degradation of things like roads and bridges and other infrastructure. Now it's not totally like I found that Nevada, the roads are in pretty good shape, and around Phoenix and some parts of Texas, but Mississippi, Louisiana, the Florida Panhandle, not so great.
When is it? I went off on one of my usual tangents a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if Maddie was here. I don't think he was, but we talked about this infrastructure thing, and I didn't blow up totally because my head's still on, but pretty much did. And I said, you know, I try and be somebody, and through my guests, to learn about this stuff. This whole, and maybe it's always been like this, and I'm just finally waking up to it, this whole lack of any kind of knowledge that you give the public, and yet you whine about this crap all day, not you personally. I mean, does anybody really know? Can I find a place, or anybody, and it could be, maybe it's you, can I find a place somewhere that on four sheets of paper, or I could read more than four, but maybe four is the limit for most, it says, okay, interstate highways, 90% was paid for by the government, maintenance is 90% government, federal 20%. I don't know who's responsible for any of this crap. Now, a U.S. highway, I know that's different. Now, even though it's U.S. highway, now if we replaced the bridge on LaGrange Road, which is 45, 20, and 12, all U.S. highways, does the federal government pay 90% of the replacement? Do they play 70% of the maintenance, or 50? Because Chicago had a gig where they weren't high U.S. highways at all. They're just bridges downtown where they would wait until they were condemned, and then they'd shut the damn thing down with no maintenance whatsoever. And then the federal government would pay a higher percentage of the new bridge than they pay to the maintenance. I mean, is there any way somebody could explain to me all these games? Plus, I think at this point, I could use, and I think maybe you already know, the federal gas tax. Have we spirited it off to God knows what else? I mean, let's assume it's not enough. It hasn't been raised in 20 years. But is the gas tax pumping in $3 billion a year? And, oh, by the way, we took 2.9 of it into something else, so we only had $100 million left. No wonder the places are falling apart. Or is it enough? Is another two pennies going to do it? I haven't read anything like that. And yet everybody's got an opinion about bills and printing more money and infrastructure, and they're winging the thing around. Is anybody have any idea what they or you and I would be talking about in terms of, you know, what is the number? How much of the U.S. highways are in horrible shape now? But the states have to come up with 40% of that. Do the states have any money? Or even if we decide we want to do it, it's still things going to sit there rusted? Or the interstates are 90%, so we can do that on our own. I mean, does anybody know any of this stuff? I guess is my question.
Well, the federal government actually has an agency for that. I sound like Elizabeth Warren. Yeah, they've got a plan for that. It's called the Federal Highway Administration. Oddly enough, it shares the same access road with the CIA headquarters. But you can go to their website. They actually keep track. They do testing of bridges and for safety and other matters. But the Federal Highway Administration is part of the Department of Transportation. And I had to call a scientist there, an engineer, on another story once, and I found them to be extremely helpful. Then I checked out their website, and they keep a running tally of, now, obviously, they don't know when there's an accident, like what happened to the I-40 bridge that links Memphis to Arkansas, which apparently, I think, is still shut down, causing huge problems there. That was due to a crack in the bridge itself, but apparently the safety inspectors saw it, but their bosses covered it up, which, my God, if there's any other cases like that, we could be in real trouble. Of course, everybody remembers what happened to that interstate bridge in Minneapolis.
Oh, yeah.
A few years back. Yeah, I mean, there are resources where you can go. I just feel fortunate I didn't plan my trip on Interstate 40 through Memphis, because that might have got me stuck in traffic for several hours. But these poor people are commuting every morning and every afternoon, having to put up with that.
Well, did you notice any difference between the interstates, the U.S. highways, and the state roads? I mean, if it's infrastructure, a lot of the stuff we travel on are state roads. So if we're not going to help the states out, I mean, have we borrowed against the Highway Trust Fund? I guess that's a simple question. Have we used all the money for roads? I'm going to guess the answer is no.
I think there's certain governors that you can't trust them with access to any sort of money, whether it's federal, shared state-federal money or state money, or money that's being returned out from these privatized turnpikes, toll roads. Ohio had a huge scandal a few years back with the toll roads there. Apparently, one of these guys was pocketing all the change, no pun intended, and that's exactly what they were doing up there. And here in Florida, of course, we have Ron DeSantis, and, you know, if you've got a lockbox of funds, if he gets the key to that thing, it's going to be spent, and not for the intended purposes. So, I think that's where it gets very complicated. Where does the federal tax money, highway tax money go? Where does the state tax money go? Hopefully if this infrastructure bill, and I haven't read it, and I know it's going to be amended, doing that right now, there's all kinds of proposals they take a look at the financial part of that too, because it is a license for some of these state governors to steal, especially Greg Abbott in Texas would be one of the other suspects to do that type of thing. What's happening in Texas is and to an extent here in Florida, although Florida, they're putting tolls on new highways, and Texas are taking existing highways and putting tolls on them. I drove through Texas, and 2 months after my trip, I'm getting bills in the mail like, oh, we took your photo, you owe us $5.50 because you took this road through Houston or Austin.
Really? Well, I mean,
we have a comment here from Robert on Twitter, and you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks and Jocks. He says, funny that you guys brought up bridges and the FHA. There is a bridge on 80 near Joliet that's rated a 7. That means they spend all this money and time to inspect it, and at some point it was a 20, but the committee said, no, I think we were good.
God.
Yeah.
Well, who pays? Yeah, I mean, simple question. Well, not a simple question, but what are they overrun on this Jane Byrne thing, Maddie? I mean, now that's an interstate, okay, but it's in a downtown area, so I don't know what the split is on that.
It's been, what, a 5-year rebuild so far?
I'm thinking it's going to end up at like 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Which is, what, 3 times as long as it took to build the Golden Gate, for God's sake, and to fight World War II, twice as long as that. Now, that thing is going to be, what, Maddie, 2.5 times? Overrun is it? Now, do you lob $1 billion to the city, and the city says, "Oh, it was really $3 billion." Now, does the Fed send that check, or I mean, how does that even work, Wayne?
There's certain construction projects for highways and things like tunnels that seem to never end. You might recall in Boston.
Oh God,
this,
yeah.
Tunnel project. It took forever. I guess they finally fixed it.
Well, the Oakland, the Bay Bridge, I think they lobbed it out to a Chinese firm, right? And it came in, what, something like 7 times over budget or something? Some huge number. And somebody wrote that check to China. Who the hell was it? Obviously, it's Interstate 80 is the Bay Bridge, right? So the federal government's all over the fact that it's an interstate highway, because when it was built, there was no interstate system. So I don't know how that works. Because that was the interstate system was, what, 1956, and that thing was built in 1934. So somehow it's been added to the system. I don't know what that does for maintenance. Does Oakland just call up Washington and say, sorry, instead of $2 billion, it's $7 billion, send me $5 billion? I mean, that can't be how it works, Wayne. I mean, does the city...
I'm afraid these construction projects are like making salami. You might like the finished product, but you don't want to see how it's made. Yeah, I remember Interstate 95 was complete from Maine all the way down to Florida, except for one portion because the construction kept lingering on, because, you know, obviously it was through downtown Philadelphia. And you know, how many mob unions were involved in that deal? That it took forever, it seemed, to complete Interstate 95. You know, they had it completed in rural North Carolina. They had it completed in, you know, the swamps of Florida and Georgia, but when it came to downtown Philly, you had to get off of it and go down on Delaware Avenue, which is by the kind of a seedy part of town, and then you picked up 95 when you got out of Philly.
Well, the big there were a couple spots on I-55 that were like that, and you know, they were like the last pieces to put in. But the local people, guys like Matt Weber that own like the cheeseburger place on the local street there, the last thing they wanted was the interstate completed. Because everybody would make that their spot. Well, we got to get off there anyway. We'll get gas and a cheeseburger there.
That's sort of what happened with you know, a lot of places. You know, people used to take, you know, Route 66. You know, all those sort of tourist attractions. Some of them went out of business. I guess some of them are still, you know, plodding along. But you know, when I drove out west, I saw a lot of these sort of abandoned places that were off on the old interstate, the old
road,
Route 66. Yeah.
Well, that, matter of fact, that's where I got my chance. Right when I-57 first opened here in Illinois, I was a freshman in college, so we drove down to see Joe Theismann play in the Cotton Bowl against Texas. And one of the places where you had to drive through, because I can say I was actually in Bill Clinton's hometown. You actually had to get off the interstate and drive through Hope, Arkansas for like, I'm going to say 2-3 miles. Well, what a town that was. I mean, you didn't want to live there. And the weird part is, there was a big banner across the street. I remember this today, to this day. Hope, Arkansas, a tourist center of the southern Midwest. Are going, I mean, what tourists would come to this place?
You know, it's that. By the way, that's not only the hometown of Bill Clinton, it's also the hometown of Mike Huckabee and Ken Starr.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So what's going on in this town that they can produce these people?
I don't know. When are we going to get, I guess the part that I'm sort of bitching about, for lack of a better term, is I'm sort of getting tired of bills that are like 90 bazillion pages long and like all our money, like the Patriot Act. Man, you don't want some guy with a turban raping your mom. You know? I mean, come on. I mean, I need more to know about the bill than that. You know, now this one is going to be, do you like infrastructure? Do you want the potholes beaten up on your new Corvette? I mean, come on. I mean, how many bazillion people are going to get money in there or not? This bill now, the 250 million or billion, the compete with China bill, where we're going to give money to all these companies that move the stuff to China in the first place. I mean, Wayne, what are we doing?
I think that, you know, it's going to take some major oversight because, you know, when it goes into, you know, earmarks, you know, somebody says, oh, I need this. They did it. They had a big interstate finance bill several years back, and they found out that this guy, Ken Calvert, this Republican from Southern California, he put in an earmark to have the interstate connect with some personal property that he owned, which, of course, increased the value, and he made out very well on that. But I think hopefully people like Katie Porter in the House, who, you know, apparently her background is as a financial bean counter, as an accountant, people like her will, you know, question this type of stuff unless she has some earmarks she wants to.
Well, if she has one, then that'll be that. It sounds like a trade, doesn't it?
One
for you and one for me.
And you know what? I don't know whether they're going to ever change it. You know, it's whoever is in power in Congress, they're going to, you know, they all have their pet projects. But that brings up an interesting point. You know, I expect members of Congress to do that. It's been done forever. You know, people say, well, what kind of pork are you going to bring into our district? But two members of Congress apparently have not been doing that. They spend all their time on the road raising money as grifters for, that's Matt Gaetz from here in Florida and, this Marjorie Taylor Greene. They've got this road show. Apparently Greene doesn't even have a constituent office, in her district in Northwest Georgia. She is, operating apparently out of two post office boxes there. I mean, talk about a sleazy fly-by-night operation. And Matt Gaetz, you know, he's very rarely in his district. He's either fundraising with Greene or hanging out at Mar-a-Lago with Trump or, you know, down around Miami doing some stuff that's probably not legit. So, you know, that's a kind of a killer if you're not bringing in the pork for your
Well, that's how Evan Bayer, the Bayer lost in Indiana. That he had a house, and people were pissed he wasn't in Indiana for a while. Speed Futures.
That's right, and that's why Eric Cantor, who was the Republican leader whip in the House, he lost his election because he spent all his time up in Washington, which was commuting distance from his district. So.
Wayne, can you hang through the break, buddy? SP Futures up 6, NASDAQ Futures up 17. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Wayne Manson with us as well. S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 17. So yesterday was an odd day. We had the European Central Bank saying they're pouring money into the system no matter what inflation says. And after that, we had a real hot inflation number, and it appears the central bank won out, as usual. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 73.5%. These guys really haven't changed since last time. FTSE up 38.5, CAC around up 46.7, so moderately higher over there. Asia, we got the Nikkei down 9, call that flat. Shanghai down 21.6%, and Hang Seng up 103.4%, so kind of mixed bag over there, but certainly not bearish. Maybe not bullish either, but just yesterday, Dow was up 19, S&P up 19, with a big move in the S&P, that's 0.5%. NASDAQ up on 108, that's 0.8%. And we've got bonds, 10-year rates actually down, even with the inflation number just at 1.45. It's the lowest we've seen in a while. Bund, minus 0.27, same thing. In Japan, we're looking at heading back towards zero, positive 0.03. Oil, now it's down 8 cents, was up a little bit earlier. Down 8 cents, 70.21, still above 70. Brent up 5 cents, 72.47. Natural gas up 11, 3.26. Again, we'll talk to somebody about this next week, but it's got to be due to the droughts in California and other places and hot weather. RBOB down 3 cents, 2.17. We got gold is down 5.20. Still right up here at 1891. It keeps toying with this 1900 number. Does not seem to want to break through. Over silver is up 0.7%, up 19 cents, 28.22. First time we've seen over 28 in a while. Copper up almost 9 cents at 4.57. So everything's moving up with gold. Platinum up 4.30. Like I said, every metal's up but gold. And we've got crypto. Bitcoin up 6.56 at 37,302. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the Dan Ryan local lanes. This is on the outbound side. Looks like it's just before 31st Street, which is exit 54. That's blocking the right lane. So some congestion on the outbound Ryan. Not affecting the inbound side or the express lanes, it would appear. But on the outbound side, local lanes. Looks like some traffic building steadily on the Stevenson and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for the Kennedy. We did have an earlier stall on the Tri-State northbound just before I-290. That stalled vehicle has been cleared, but expect significant delays on the Tri-State northbound side. A lot of traffic volume, especially with that earlier stalled vehicle that's just recently been cleared. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, warm temperatures, a high of 85. Right now it's crystal clear and 75 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 72. In sports, the White Sox take 2 of 3 from Toronto, beating the Blue Jays last night 5-2. Cubs were off. They'll host the St. Louis Cardinals this afternoon at Wrigley. That's a 1:20 first pitch, and it's the first game all season in front of 100% capacity. Diamondbacks were off last night. They'll host the Angels tonight, 6:40 Arizona time first pitch. And lastly, Game 3 of the NBA Western Conference Semifinals tips off tonight, 7 p.m. Phoenix time, as the Suns are at Denver tonight. That's Phoenix leading that series 2-0. Chief.
So, Matty, real quick, excuse me for a second, Wayne. There's no such thing as tickets at Wrigley anymore. So if you're a season ticket holder, you're not going to get your box of tickets.
There's still such thing as tickets. They're just not in paper form. You still have to have a ticket. You can't just walk into the ballpark.
A ticket is something I can hold in my hand.
No, it's not.
A ticket
gives you admission into something. It could be a medallion. It could be a piece of paper. It could be something you scan on your phone. It could be a shoe. It could be anything.
Something you scan on your phone is not something.
It could be a retinal scan. It could be a fingerprint. It just allows you admission into something.
How did we go from people not their tickets not being worth? You couldn't go in last week, but now you can. So every seat is now full, and all of a sudden we're fully staffed with personnel. I mean, if they are. I mean, it seems like a big jump in one day.
Well, they've been at 65% for last 6 weeks or
so
8 weeks
gradual.
Maybe, something like that. And then before that, they were 50, and then before that, they were 25. So it's been gradual.
All right, so you think it's going to work out okay?
I think it's going to work seamlessly. It's worked for 100 years at that 107 at that ballpark.
See, I would not buy season tickets anymore because I wouldn't get my ticket. I want my ticket. Just saying, Wayne. You know, what can I say? I'm a Luddite.
You'd still get your ticket. You're just not going to have to carry a piece of paper that you can lose.
I never lost it.
I never said you did, but you can, and now you can't.
Well, if you don't even have the thing on your phone, you never had it in the first place, so I can't lose it.
Well, you didn't buy them, so why would you have it?
Well, that's true.
you got to buy them.
What happens if I buy one today? Well, I can't go get one. I like to go to a game and buy one outside the gate. I think you can. How do you do that?
You go to the gate and buy a ticket.
I'm talking about from somebody outside there.
Oh, for scalping? They have scalpers.
How do you do that?
I saw them when I was there. I don't know. I don't know if they're still accepting paper tickets in some instances or not, or if the scalper gives you a code. I don't know how it works. I didn't buy from them, but I saw them out there.
Hey, Wayne, I have a question for you. It seems like our income tax revenue is not going up very much, but our spending sure as hell is. But this is just a thought. In, you know, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, if you were a senator or representative, even if you were the biggest sleazebag on earth, male or female, you sort of, every time you spent money you didn't have, two things had a kind of rock in your brain, I think. One is, I'd have to increase taxes for whatever I feel like spending here, so it better be a good enough idea where I can sell that story. Or I have to borrow it, in which case I'm taking it out of somebody else's hands. Is what I'm spending the money on really that much more important or better than what the person would spend it on themselves? Because really, you were just trading money, right? I'm not going to go into the Keynesian routine about how you actually pick up a little on savings and something, but let's just say you had to either borrow it or tax it. Well, now I get this feeling, and you're closer to the action than me, that the third way, where the Fed just prints it and hands it to you, is becoming a real easy way to spend money, to the point where I don't think people even think that they have to tax it or borrow it. They just think, I mean, we're up to almost $8 trillion on the Fed. What's the difference between 8 and 20? I mean, the next $12 trillion is spent, they just might as well print it and hand it to you, right? I mean, is this becoming to the point now where people don't even know they're spending a dollar? I suspect it sounds to me like it is, or it looks to me like it is.
You know, when I was in L.A., I visited a friend of mine who's a big proponent now of Bitcoin. And I asked him, now I remember talking to one of the original architects back in the 90s on cryptocurrency, and it didn't make any sense to me then, and it certainly doesn't make any sense to me now, because I asked my friend, I says, well, what is it? What is it you have? And he says, well, it's out there, it's in the mail, and the blah, blah, blah. I says, yeah, but can you take it down to one of these new, in L.A., they actually got pot stores now, marijuana. They sell all kinds of stuff, cookies and pot buds.
We'll do that in Chicago. We're doing that here, too.
I said, can you take that cryptocurrency down here and buy enough for the weekend? And he said, well, it doesn't work like that. I said, if it doesn't work like that, what good is it? You know, I mean, and I'm just wondering now, what is money anymore? Because, you know, Is the Fed actually printing money, or are they just going in and resetting some things in the computer and say, okay, you know, now we got this much in the money supply. You know, it's all digital. I think that, and I don't know the answer. I don't, you know, digital money, for Star Trek fans, you know, they always said in the future, there basically isn't any money. You never see anybody pay except, you know, some illegal fiat currency that was going around from the Ferengis, you know. But, I just don't know what money is anymore.
Those guys were Matt Weber's heroes, the Ferengis. Matt, even know who those guys were?
Gold Press Latinum in Star Trek. That's what they were. That was sort of a...
Matt, you know who the Ferengis were?
I do not.
They were guys, little creepy guys that were horny as hell. All they did was run around and chase all the women. But they also had ships, and all they did was market like illegal and stuff from place to place. They were like the carpetbaggers of space. All they cared about was money when nobody else even cared about it. Right? They ran around and all they did was make profit. You know,
like space pirates.
Yeah,
they're
like space pirates. Everything was profit based.
Yeah, everything was profit based. They were like space pirates.
They had these huge ears so they could hear all the business deals going down.
Yeah, they go into a bar and they can hear everybody's business deal because they had these huge ears.
I've never seen an episode of that show.
There were some really good ones. They got some bad ones near the end when they cut the budget. There was nowhere near as good a lot as the Next Generation, but there was some. pretty interesting ones. I mean, in terms of what you might find and how people out in space are pretty much the same as we were in a lot of ways. But anyway, the but it seems like there doesn't seem to be any respect for the numbers, Wayne. And I don't know, is that just me, you know, sensing it more?
I get the feeling that maybe the whole paradigm has changed now, where, you know, when Everett Dirksen, your old senator from your state, said, you know, a billion here, a billion there, pretty soon it adds up to real money. I think he was talking about cold cash, but I'm not certain that, you know, if Dirksen were around today, he'd say, you know, where's the money? What is it?
Well, I've got the budget deficit official. It's almost as high as the, well, let me give the numbers out here. This is from the U.S. debt clock. The total income tax revenue is like $1.66 trillion. Total payroll tax revenue is $1.3 trillion. So actually, I mean, $1.6 trillion is all they get from all the income tax. Corporate tax revenue is $231 billion. So it's like 6 or 7% of the total, which is pretty ridiculous when you think about it. Tariff is like $66 billion. All right, so we're up to $3.333 trillion. Okay, and we're spending like $6.3 trillion. I mean, it's not even on the same planet anymore. I mean, I'm not, when a COVID situation happens, you know, I'm going to say that you're going to spend more than you have because it's an unusual event. But God's sake, the deficit is as big as the tax revenue. I mean, I don't know how you can.
I bet if I were a fly on the wall over there in Cornwall, England, for this G7 meeting, I would be hearing a lot from these leaders that are gathered there about, you know, things like cryptocurrency, how they're going to deal with it, and also they're talking about ransomware. You know, all these ransomware criminals out there, they want to be paid in cryptocurrency. You've got El Salvador. Just the other day, said Bitcoin is legal tender now in our country. China's saying they're going to go to a digital currency. So I just think that, you know, it's probably the top thing on the agenda, the G7, and I would think that these guys are scratching their head too. Boris Johnson and Macron and France, they're all saying, "What's going on here? What are we dealing with?"
Well, a digital currency doesn't mean it's different than the one you have. It just means it's digital. I mean, the terms that people are flying around here, a lot of these guys that use them can't even. Your Bitcoin is something. Well, you see what the I'll start this from the top. What people are doing to their quote fiat currencies. I mean, they're making them to the point where there's really nothing behind them, and a lot of people, especially young people, are saying, "What's the difference between Bitcoin with nothing behind it?" In the dollar with nothing behind it, because I mean, basically, where it's all start, and the idea that in my mind that you would have an alternative currency that would stop the U.S. from like doubling the money supply in 4 years or something insane that we never did before, except maybe during a civil war. It doesn't surprise me, Wayne, that somebody, some strong person in the world, or not person but country, would say we're going to have a currency that's based on, pick something. Gold probably is too ancient, but for every a dollar's worth, a cup of oil or something. So you know that if you bring, you know, $500 in, you're going to get 2 barrels of oil, or whatever the hell 500 cups of oil is. So based on something, it wouldn't surprise me that somebody says, hey, you know what, we're so tired of the U.S. just printing more crap, and all of a sudden the Central Bank of Europe prints more crap, and every year I think my Apple stock is up 40%, but in fact, there's just 40% more dollars around, so my Apple stock isn't going anywhere. It's just my dollars every day I have in my pocket and don't spend them are getting less and less, getting worth less and less, which is really what's happening. I mean, I think. So for somebody to plot an alternative to that, to me, makes perfect sense. Now, enter the Bitcoin BS, as I call it, where, you know, some guy came down from the mountaintop with a beard like one of the guys in Kung Fu and put this thing together and then left it for his children to grow, and there's nobody behind it, and nobody's running it, and people have scads of computers next to hydroelectric dams mining these things. To me, this is such a load of crap, I can't even go there. I mean, there's no man behind the curtain. And now here's this currency. It's based on nothing. Why would you ever want a currency that you bought a car for 40 grand, you gave the guy one Bitcoin, and 2 days later, the guy's sitting there holding a Bitcoin worth 32 grand, and now he just lost 6 grand on his car. I mean, you don't want it. The whole point of having an alternative currency is for that not to happen, to where the dollar is worth roughly the same 10 years later, because when you pull it out of your safety deposit box or under your mattress, it's still worth something. The reason why you want something alternative is because with our policy right now, the dollar 10 years from now might not be worth much. I won't say nothing. So, I mean, everything you would like to solve with an alternative currency, this Bitcoin, in my mind, doesn't do it. So, and maybe one of the other ones does.
Yeah, the other thing that confuses me is they say there's now a semiconductor shortage because these cryptocurrencies use a lot of computing power, and it's almost like you need that for this currency to maintain any or increase in value. Now there's a semiconductor shortage because there's just not enough, there's a great demand now for increased computing power to handle cryptocurrency. I don't know. I just fail to see the connection between the two.
Well, there was
I certainly know about computing power and the need, some other practical needs for it.
Well, Mr. Weber mentioned earlier he watched 60 Minutes for the first time. And the last times I watched it, Manny, they had some special. Some guys, or whoever they were, guys, male or female, have got these massive warehouses right near the Grand Coulee Dam. Because evidently, if you're willing to buy power from the Grand Coulee Dam at 2 in the morning, they got nowhere to go with it at that time. So you can buy it for, God knows what percentage of the electric bill you would have here. And they showed pictures of these places. Maybe there had to be thousands and thousands of, what do you want to call them, desktop computers, servers, whatever you want to call them. I don't know about that stuff. One right after another, and they're mining Bitcoin. Within the power you can only get from like a dam, or if you're next to a nuclear plant at 3 in the morning for that price. And I'm sitting there going, what are these people doing? Where are they mining it from? And what do they, where does it pop up at the end and say you have one? Who's the control guy somewhere that says, okay, Maddie, your mining effort was good. Here you go, and hand it to you. It's way beyond my pay grade to understand any of this, but I don't know that it's causing a chip shortage, but it's certainly using up a lot of electricity in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and then there's that one guy that had all that money invested in Bitcoin. He couldn't remember his password, and he lost it all.
Well, and everybody expects us to believe that nobody's getting those. The ones that after 10 years somebody's not grabbing them. I mean,
it's beyond me. It's Twilight Zone stuff.
I
don't understand.
Somebody's getting it.
Entries of it.
I mean, somebody's getting it. It's like, really?
Elon Musk. See, what he just said Tesla, they're not going to accept Bitcoin anymore. So maybe he mined it for everything he could get out of it. He's going to go to something else now.
Well, do we really believe, not to lob into ancient history, all the German people who brought their valuables, gold and paintings and stuff, and put it in safety at the Swiss banks, and then they wouldn't give it to the kids because they didn't have a death certificate, because they didn't give out death certificates in concentration camp. So anybody really think that stuff's still there? But nobody got it? I mean, can we be that naive?
Yeah, I think there may be more value in these old boys down south that still have their Confederate money. They think that would be worth something one day.
Or your greenbacks. So are we making progress with the new administration? A lot of people are really, I know people that all they're doing here is going to concealed carry classes. You can't even buy bullets. It can't be healthy, Wayne. I mean, what are we doing?
This administration was dealt something that a whole lot of incoming administrations don't have to deal with, and that's a pandemic. And Biden kept his focus and his priority on getting people vaccinated. Now he's saying we've got to get the people around the world vaccinated because these variants can come back and bite us. So he had that to deal with. And now that I think they believe they've got it somewhat under control because you know, even here in Florida, I know things are coming back because the gentlemen's club's parking lots are now full again. These old geezers, you know, they they go in there. They were closed for, you know, almost a year. So, you know, that's how I judge the economy returning here in Florida. But anyway, now we hear more about infrastructure and the other things that were on the, you know, to-do list. But I think they had kind of like a five-month inability to do anything else because they were trying to make up lost ground from the last administration on the pandemic.
The I'm starting to get almost teed off when anybody uses, we need to work on, like, infrastructure. It's like we need to work on motherhood. I mean, what exactly are we talking about doing? I mean, it seems to me, Wayne, that in the 30s, when you built the Golden Gate Bridge or you built the Holland Tunnel or the Lincoln Tunnel, whichever one was first, I think the Lincoln Tunnel might have been first, you opened up areas to commerce. They were serious investments. Fixing a bridge that people have allowed to go into disrepair through incompetence doesn't get you anywhere. I mean, it gets you the bridge back, okay, and it gets you some hours worked, and it gives the concrete guy some money, but it doesn't get you any place. Get you? I mean, I guess if you replace the 2-lane bridge with a 3-lane bridge, you get somewhat of a blend of progress versus whatever. But the fact that your people didn't paint the bridge for 40 years and now it fell into the river. That's a waste. That's not progress.
Yeah, I think one of the things I don't think it's just fixing bridges and fixing roads. I mean, there's a situation out in the Southwest, and I picked up on this while I was there. You know, the Colorado River is at the lowest point, and so is Lake Mead, the Hoover Dam. And since I guess the 30s when it, you know, was first built.
Yeah, there was a spot in the middle where it got almost as low, but yeah, you're right.
I would think that there's going to be money set aside for things like desalinization plants. I think they are in the future for not only you know, Arizona, and you know, they're going to have to pipe it in from the sea. That's going to be a huge cost, so I think they're looking at you know, and what's causing this drought, this current, it's now you know, multi-year drought out in the Southwest. I was talking to somebody in Tucson, said they have to drill down 700 feet to get water now from wells.
Yeah, it's bad.
That's incredible.
Well, but it also comes down to when you say, okay, everybody, I'll tell you a quick story. My grandfather was a boilermaker. He took like a month off because he worked for the railroads. He could ride the trains for free. He went to California to see if he wanted to move the family there. This is in the, you know, I'm going to say probably right after the war. It might have been during the 30s. And he came back and he said, there's not enough water out there for all the growth. It was 80 years. It was 80 years ago. I mean, there's still not. I mean, so when you move, you know, 10,000 people from Peoria or someplace, or Buffalo, or 50,000 from Buffalo or St. Louis out to L.A., it doesn't increase the rain or the water, does it? I mean, how much more can you pull out of? I mean, how much of the Colorado River goes to Vegas? And Vegas used to be, the whole state of Nevada was under 100 million people when I started going out there. Now, what is Vegas, 1.5 million? This stuff doesn't change, Wayne. I mean, it's not progress to move, you know, 500,000 people from Chicago to some place where there's no water and then say, hey, where the hell is the water? Well, it wasn't there in the first place.
Right.
I mean, there's a million decisions that we make every day, and then 5 years later we go, hey, what did we do? I mean, right?
And we know that California is losing population for the first time because they've lost the congressional seat. And where are the people from Southern California moving? Arizona.
Yeah.
Which is not what they need there now. They don't need more people because they, you know, have this tremendous water issue that's,
well, they just opened up a new,
hit them hard.
They opened up about 10 years ago another canal to Phoenix. So somehow Phoenix won the big fight. I mean, it's not obvious to anybody, and you probably know, but I have a couple of friends who live out there. One of them died, but the fight for Colorado River from Steamboat Springs water is not just Colorado water. It's California water. It's Arizona water. It's Nevada water. They're all fighting over essentially another state's water. It's not like here. I mean, it's not like here at all. I mean, it's
right.
It's crazy stuff. What do you think these this bill's gonna? Well, the one already passed. What do you think the chances are of the next one? We only got 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, there's a group of Republicans and Democrats in the Senate that they've got a bill ready to go. They've agreed to it, so I think we're going to see some movement on that. And if they've done that, that means McConnell's giving them a wink and a nod on it.
All right. Well, hey, thanks, buddy. Good hearing you. I'm glad to see you're all right. Is your buddy good?
Oh, yeah, he's fine. One of these days we will be heading back to Chicago, maybe sooner rather than later.
That's what you told me a year and a half ago. Of course, we had a pandemic in the middle.
I know that we had the pandemic, yeah.
I got to cut you some slack on the pandemic. Take care of yourself, okay. Bud. Up 750, NASDAQ futures up 10.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.